This is the MLWRadio.com Network.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. Your host, Striga. And for a final time for this year's G1 Climax Tournament, I'm of course joined by Dylan Fox.
It's good to be here again this morning recording. The G1 Climax literally just ended like maybe an hour and a half ago at this point.
Not even. I think like an hour ago.
Yeah, maybe an hour ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's good to be here. I love doing these shows. And the G1, one of my favorite times of the year, especially the G1 final, such a big show in Japanese wrestling. Among, you know, every company, this is among literally the biggest shows of the year, in my opinion, whether it's this show, Wrestle Kingdom, we'll talk a little bit about next year's on this show, but all of the good stuff we had in the tournament, I've loved doing the shows with you so far and covering the every show of the G1, either on here, I did some shows on Patreon, but me and you have covered a lot of it as well, just together, and that's been a ton of fun for me, and hopefully all the listeners out there, hopefully you guys listening to the show are enjoying it and enjoying the ride. And now we can add one more go-round for this year's tournament because we have a lot to talk about today when it comes to New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yes, absolutely. We are going to focus on the G1 final show, basically on the tournament matches because I wasn't able to watch much more. But we talk about some of the non-tournament stuff. Dylan, this is show number 8. Since the G1 started this year, so we had a great schedule, actually. Usually we record it on those off days, sometimes on a day before the next show happens, so I was really glad to go through this tournament with you, and I want to say this show wouldn't be possible without you always being there whenever I call, basically, because this week was really tough for me. We planned to do this show a bit bigger. We planned to do another mega show like we did in years past, but the timetable that I'm having this week wasn't really in favor of that, so we pulled back on that. I wanted to invite a third guest to, a guest to this show, so we could do this in a trifecta, but because of my schedule, I didn't do that. I just said, okay, Dylan, do you have time when the G1 ends? And Dylan basically just said yes. So it's...
There's never any question. No matter what time of day it is, I will make time. Because I want to be here with you, Strig. I want to be here for the listeners. I don't care if it's overnight, the middle of the day, evenings, any kind of... some sort of time, the dark hour.
It's the morning hours now.
Yes. Yes, it is the morning hours right now, as we record.
Yes, and so I came home yesterday, sat down, watched the two semifinal matches, and today I came home to watch the final. We are in this time of the day where I have some off time because I have to go back to school tonight for the parents' committee meeting, actually. But in between, I will watch the G1 Climax and record a podcast about it. So here we go.
All right. That's what I want to hear.
Exactly. So, yeah, I got my coffee here. I'm ready to go. And Dylan, let us start with the final day of block action. And we can also talk about the attendances, of course, because on this day, on the second to last day of the G1 Climax, they drew 3,227 fans to Budokan. Not a great draw. The venue, gotta say, looked pretty empty. And I don't know, it didn't feel like that there was a lot of excitement going around for this final day of block action, because basically what we said on our last show exactly that happened. Everything basically happened. And I got to say, the biggest surprise of this show probably was the Naito and Zack Sabre match being an under 2 minute match. But except for that, everything else had to be expected. And so ultimately, it was a show without any surprises. And it wasn't the best show, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was anything that is worth going crazy over overall. You know, if you weren't keen on looking at things like certain people were on this show, which I'm pretty sure we both were, but if you weren't keen, you could say, oh, Phantasmo over Shingo and Tama Tonga over Jay White, those are big upsets. But they did set them up effectively
They are, but in the context of the tournament, yes. They are not.
Yes, exactly. You're completely right on that.
That's what it comes down to. And I would actually say that looking at this show, the two best matches of the show was the opening and the main event. So Ospreay versus Robinson and Okada versus Lance Archer.
Yeah, I think the Ishii and Sonata match was pretty good. It didn't touch the level of the other Ishii matches in the past, obviously, but it was a good match. I probably liked that a little better than the opener. I thought the main event was definitely the best match on the show. It's not like this was some epic Okada match that was like 29 minutes or something. It was a very fast-paced match.
I thought it was Lance Archer's best role that he has ever played in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Oh, I completely agree with that. And he's somebody, like, I didn't think his tournament was that great, to be honest with you. I thought he kind of, you know, when he came in, they announced him, he had a great reaction from the crowd. I was like, let's go. And then it's like, his tournament wasn't very good. But then you have this match, and it's like, yes, like, this is what we need.
Yes,
like, this is what we
exactly.
wanted. Yeah.
So, yes, I agree that this was not anywhere near any epic Okada match. But Lance Archer's role as this roadblock, I think he fulfilled that to the lengths that he could go with it. I think he brought everything that he had to Okada, even hit him with the Rainmaker and was close to winning the match. I really thought that this was done very well. I really liked Chris Charlton's call too. I think he said it's black rain or something in Budokan when Archer hit the Rainmaker on Okada. That was a great call. So for him, it probably was the best role that he could ask for in New Japan right now.
Yeah, and when I say not an epic Okada match, that's not a bad thing. It's actually a
right.
good thing. I mean, like, you know, this is only like this is less than 13 minutes according to Cage Match, which
those are my favorite Okada matches. Those are that are under 20.
I think in general, I mean, we can talk about it at the end of the tournament, kind of the full, you know, look at the tournament, because we've both watched every single match. Yeah, as promised. But we could go over some of these guys at the end, I think, would be kind of a good thing. But I spoiler alert, I think Okada had a really good tournament. He's a guy that I thought has really done a lot of good things. And I thought this is another, and I liked the way too. And I liked the way that he did have a little bit of different matches here and there, rather than just the same old formula that he usually has in the G1. So I think that's a good thing. And I thought this was a very good example of that. So yeah, that was if you're going to watch one match for that show, definitely check out the main event.
I think another match that was pretty good was the El Fantasma versus Shingo Takagi match. Something that I noticed here in this match and in other matches too, it's something that you already pointed to. There's a lot of spots that are done repetitively. And one of those is someone rolling up someone else with a crucifix hold. That has been done to death in this tournament. Other spots, of course, are the countout spots that we get here. And one more of this crucifix roll-up attempts, at least, was in this Phantasma and Shingo Takagi match. This was a pretty good match, too. Phantasma once again solidifying his role as a heavyweight in New Japan. He will definitely return next year. And, of course, they've already set up something else for Taiji Ishimori to do with the newest member of the Bullet Club in Ace Austin. He can be tag team partner for Ishimori in the junior tag tournament. And so Phantasma can go on to the heavyweights.
Yeah, and I think that was, when they announced him, it was clear to me that that was him jumping the heavyweights, and he had a pretty good run. They definitely took a lot of care into D block in general. I think everybody got a little bit of love in that block. You know, Juice got the lowest amount of points, but he still had a big win at the start, beating Shingo. So, Phantasmo, I thought he performed pretty well in the tournament. So, you know, he ended up having a good little run, got the win over Shingo at the end. As I said, they set that up beforehand. So you kind of knew that was going to happen. But they did a very good thing with him to move him out of the juniors. I think he's found a new gear that he hasn't had in general this year. And, yeah, I have a point about D Black at the end. When we go to the end of the tournament, I'll talk point. But I think that in general, that Black has something interesting to look at. But he was definitely a big beneficiary of it.
Sure, sure. What do you think about the Tama Tonga and Jay White match?
You know, I will say this. Tonga, he really does have a lot of good babyface charisma and, exactly. and underdog stuff. And that could kind of make things work for him. Even though, like I said, in a tournament like this, I don't think is really where he shines a lot. I don't think he had a very great tournament overall. But, you know, B-Block, he wasn't presented with the best roster to work with either. But the story was good. You know, the ending was pretty all right with the Gunson. But to me, this wasn't a great match, in all honesty. And actually, I think that these two, for all of the talk of this feud, like this Bullet Club rivalry, I think Tonga had good babyface charisma. But this didn't feel like, in my opinion, this didn't feel like an epic war. You know, like, the passion wasn't there for the links they've gone to for this feud, in my opinion. It felt like just it was a big match for Tonga because he got to advance into the semifinal, and that was the biggest win of his career. But it didn't feel like this personal, heated, emotional moment, in my opinion.
First of all, to Tonga, I completely agree with you on all the points that you made. For Tonga, I absolutely agree that he has this great babyface energy that he brings, and he can rally the crowd behind him with this energy. What he lacks, in my opinion, is still the ability of, this might sound rude and this might sound bad, but the ability of really putting a match together and making the parts work together. Because what he usually does is responding to his opponent's offense. And I want to say, going to the Okada match, I really liked the Okada match because Tama Tonga was able to, like, show his explosive energy in a lot of these moments. For example, when he does the Veleno, his DDT version there, or even the Gunstun, he is great in these instances where he is explosive. But the things in between, he often struggles to structure really well, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you totally hit the nail on the head there.
So that's the thing there with him, and then with the match itself, and with his feud in general. We've talked about this feud years ago, Dylan, going back on this show.
And we're still doing it now.
We're still doing it now, and it always sounded better on paper than it was in execution. And this is one more of these instances where this Bullet Club Civil War sounds better on paper than it was in execution. It was a fine match with some of the crowd getting behind it, but ultimately probably not what they imagined it would be.
To me, I think it's telling the crowd was much more into Tonga against Okada, in my opinion, than Jay. And I just think, like I said, I think Tonga isn't the only one that struggles, you know, a lot of with his ability to put together matches in that match, too. I think Jay has had a pretty poor tournament overall outside of, you know, the Okan match was good, but everything else, I continue to feel like this guy just is not a great worker in general, you know, despite his constant push and his reputation. I don't think it really follows him into matches. And I think this one, again, the crowd just wasn't that into this overall. And maybe it was a bad crowd. Like you said, it's not a great number. Let's just be honest. But even the next show wasn't like a great number. The semi-main. So, but they still...
It was even less than
yeah.
this.
So, yeah, but they rallied behind Tonga more against Okada. Sure. Against Jay. So that tells you something. When they put so much into this feud, and you're like, people still rally more against Okada. And in a feud that has, or you know, a match that has no real feud behind it, no story behind it, other than getting to the final.
Yeah, so the one hook of the match was Tonga beating Okada in the last year's G1 Climax.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't even remember that going into it, but I believe you. I know you're telling the truth here. You know, but like
yeah, it was his one loss last year.
Yeah, you're right. Now I remember that. You are right. actually, now that I do remember. He had a good little stretch of matches there, too, last year and that. But, yeah, the match wasn't great, all in all. But it wasn't, like, some terrible match either. You know, like, to me, it was probably high-end on Jay's tournament, in my opinion, and Tonga as well. You know, like I said, until the Okada match, I didn't think Tonga had a super great showing in terms of wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. Then, of course, one of the main stories of this show, besides Okada advancing to the finals, of course, that had to be expected, was Tetsuya Naito going to the semifinals, eliminating Zack Sabre Jr. in under 2 minutes, and Zack Sabre's fantastic tantrum that he threw afterwards, both ringside and afterwards backstage. I mean, the match was what it was, but I thought that Zack's ability to play this angry child was just tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great character worker. You know, he to me is among the best promos in terms of not just Japan, but I think really anywhere. You know, in terms of just cutting promos and playing an effective heel character, I think he does a great job with it. You know, he's a guy that he can always be counted on to have good matches in the tournament. I think he's a guy that had some big ones as well in this one. You know, I worked, and he's found a successful way to work within the confines of New Japan and a lot of different guys' styles. I think he's done an excellent job of finding his way there. I know everyone has always kind of loved him, but I've always thought that he wasn't doing a lot of his best work in Japan. I actually go back before he went to New Japan as like his best work, but I think now he's really found his way in New Japan and has done a great job. And obviously the character stuff really helps, because I think he's just such an entertaining guy. And I think that he's a guy, you know, they kind of teased him going to an America and making a bit of a run there, which I think is a great idea. I think that they definitely should do that. He's one of the top people that should be a U.S. guy and somebody that could do a lot of great things for the strong guys, maybe even show up on AEW if they want to do that. I think it's a great idea for him to go to America. So, yeah, you know, nothing to say about the match, really, but just a fun little segment with Zach very angry about not being able to beat Naito.
Yeah, they also announced Royal Quest, another two-day show for New Japan Pro Wrestling, on October 1st and 2nd. So that will be happening in the Crystal Palace Indoor Arena in London. And when I'm looking at this match and the ending of it, Zach being so angry at Naito, I gotta think that one of the main event matches for this double shot probably is going to be Naito versus Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah, you know, Zach in England, it's, you know, logical at the end of the day. Him and Ospreay will have big positions at Royal Quest. It seems like that the fans will be rallying behind it. We'll see what happens when they get there. You know, it's hard to make a prediction on England at the end of the day, but you have these guys here. I know that they'll get a big spot there in their home country, and it may be a big deal for them.
Exactly, yes. So I would say that's it for the block show, for the final day of block action. I didn't think this was a good show, and this also will play into what I have to say about the tournament after we go through the finals and semifinals, because it didn't really feel like there was the spark in the air, if you know what I mean. Yeah, and then we went to the semifinal show, which drew less than the final day of block action with 3,179 fans. And you mentioned, we talked about it briefly off the air, you mentioned Kidani and business and stuff. They can't be happy about these two numbers in Budokan, however you want to look at them. Of course, in comparison to other companies, those are numbers that other companies do in Budokan too. For example, Noah, they are in the same range with these numbers, but of course New Japan, they expect to do different numbers. So I don't think that this show can be considered a success at all. I want to say I watched the first three matches on the show, and I would recommend to watch those. Really short matches, under 9 minutes for all these matches. Really like the Chaos versus Suzuki-Gun opening match. It was good. Zack Sabre and Taichi versus Tom Lawler and Royce Isaacs. Once again, a good showing for Lawler and Isaacs. Really, really liked the Zack Sabre and Tom Lawler part, rolling on the ground with lots of submissions. That could be a singles match going forward if Zack Sabre makes it to the US. And Jonah and Bet Dutito defeating Togi Makabe and Tomoki Honma was a surprisingly good match with a lot of beefy action between those three big guys plus Honma. And yeah, I really liked that. Didn't make the effort to watch the next multi-man matches, match 4, 5, and 6, but then went back and watched the semifinal between Okada and Tama Tonga. 19 minutes, Okada won it with the Rainmaker. And Dylan, I want to ask you one thing. I didn't really remember that this ever was brought up, but Okada's version of the Emerald Flosion was then named the Cobra Flosion. Has anyone ever called it that?
Not that I know of. You know, that's
I searched it on Twitter, and I didn't find it, except for yesterday on Twitter.
Well, new move name here. That's the Cobra Flosion. I kind of like how he does.
I'm just actually looking at a GIF from July 19, and there's somebody that also named it Cobra Flosion. So it might have been a move that he used before.
He's definitely done that move before.
I haven't come across the name actually. But as I'm seeing it, it has been used by people on Twitter before, even dating back to May 1st of this year. So yeah.
On your part overall, as it's proven to be, but that's how things go sometimes. Okada moves sometimes, but yes, the Cobra Flosion. It set up the Rainmaker, and it's basically like the last move before you hit the Rainmaker at the end.
I really like this stretch that Okada did against Tama Tonga to finish the match with the Ensuigiri, obviously still challenging Inoki. Do you think Inoki will ever come out?
Why not? He was on that video last year.
Yeah,
I think that as long as his health is
kept. Yeah, he's gotten through his last sickness. The last photos I saw of him, he's gotten really, really old.
Yes, he is very old.
I don't know if it would be good for his health even to go to one of those shows. But if he feels like it, it would be great for him to come out for New Japan's 50th anniversary.
It would be great. Too late for that now. The 50th anniversary show was earlier this year.
Yes, but it's still the 50th anniversary year.
Yeah, I don't foresee that happening. Maybe at Wrestle Kingdom, something like that.
Maybe a video message, once again.
Yeah, even just him being in a video message is cool, in my opinion. But, Inoki, maybe one day he will. And, look, they're teasing it so much. Okada has basically adopted his entire persona, and he started that. We saw the beginnings of that at this past Wrestle Kingdom with the robe and everything. And I think it's an interesting thing, obviously. They clearly see something in that. Why not have Inoki actually, symbolically pass the torch to Okada?
Yeah, right. So the match, you mentioned already that Tama Tonga was really popular in this match. The crowd really rallied behind him. And it was interesting to me that both in this match and in the final match, Okada played more of the role of the antagonist than he usually does in his matches, and usually is more of the guy that, for example, in the Lance Archer match, that has to work against all odds. But in these two matches, it was clearly that Tama Tonga and Will Ospreay were in the positions to fight as the baby faces. What was interesting to me. To me, also, this was by far Tama Tonga's best match of his career. Really thought that once again, he brought this baby face fire and his baby face energy. And I said already that he landed a lot of his spots, his explosive spots, his surprising spots, and got a lot out of this crowd. And ultimately, Okada was just too powerful for him and put him away with Rainmaker, which had to be expected. But still, I thought this was a good match.
Yeah, this was a good match. Definitely the best of Tama's tournament. And yeah, I think you can make the case for a singles match, the best of his career, I'd have to say. I agree with that. I think he stepped up on the big stage here. That's always great to see. You know what? Here's a criticism, constructive criticism. If he is listening, I will give this piece of advice. Something I think would make his matches, especially in a situation like this, if he's ever in a title match or a big match like this, something I think would really help his matches is if he had a big move, besides the gun stun, a real big finish. Because here's the thing, these gun stun, that's his ace in the hole all the time, and we see a million different counters to it. Whereas I would rather there be a more believable finisher that he can use against an Okada-level guy that will add variety to his matches, because I think that's the one problem with him is that his a lot of his offense is so much based around getting the gun stun that, and I mean, it's a great move. That's like, you know, the diamond cutters, the ace crusher, whatever you want to call it, RKO. It's one of the best moves ever, like, you know, in my opinion, in wrestling. So I get it, and it's cool. But I just think that if he had a different move that he could throw in there to mix it up a little bit and be believable, because I don't think anybody thought that, you know, after the third counter, it's tough to really get into those kind of spots as much, in my opinion. But he ended up doing some good things. We saw another, listen, we have a spiritual member of this G1, AJ Styles. we saw the Pele kick landed from Tonga in this match. So we you know, AJ is inspiring a lot of people these days, I think. But we saw another instance of this as well, where he saw the Pele kick used. But yeah, I really liked this match. I thought it was very good. Okada looked really good again. I think he's been a very consistent guy. And we've seen Tonga too. Another thing, he's using the Bloody Sunday as well. So more Bullet Club references in the past year.
The Bullet Club lore is strong in this tournament.
Yes, in this promotion, you know, pretty much by design. Mm. But yeah, we see on that. But it was a good match, honestly. And I thought Tonga did a great job. Like you said, they ended up working it very successfully to get him over to this Budokan crowd against Okada. And Okada did a great job in his role as well. So it was a really good match, all in all.
What do you think about the Will Ospreay versus Tetsuya Naito match, the ending of it, and a lot of fans being disappointed that Naito didn't make it to the finals?
Yeah, you know, well, first of all, I think one of the, you know, he countered the Stormbreaker into the Destino, which I know popped a lot of people.
Yes.
That looked really good. And in terms of the finish, he went for the Destino again. He's another guy that would be smart to add a different finisher, I think.
Yeah, we've been over that too throughout the tournament, yes.
Yeah, so we saw that again. In the end, he finally hit the Stormbreaker to win. Ospreay did. In terms of disappointment, you know, here's the thing. I know a lot of people were talking about, like, Naito's finished as a main event player in New Japan. But to me, he's not, like, any different than he was before. Like, you know, it's like he's kind of in the same spot as he was here. A guy that they trust at a big level. Maybe not the top level, right, you know, right now, and which they never really have. You know, it's funny, Naito's career, again, we could talk about him more at the end of the tournament, I think, you know, just overall, because I think there's an interesting point you could look at with him. But overall, I thought Naito would win, honestly. I thought it made sense to do Naito and Okada again, but they've done that match so many times this year already. So I don't think it's some terrible decision to put Ospreay over.
I want to say they did this pretty well so that most of Naito's supporters would think that he would advance because he lost his first two matches, then came back big with lots of wins, even beat Zack Sabre in this very quick match, then came into this match healthy in comparison to Will Ospreay, where with Will they brought it up that he has this neck injury. So everything pointed towards Tetsuya Naito actually making it, but in the end he did not. And one of the things that I also put out on Twitter, I said this, and you and I already have talked about that too, and that's that what you alluded to earlier with your point on Naito. He is a guy that Gedo never fully got behind, and his one, there were people pointing out that, of course, COVID hit when Naito became champion. But even then, his title run was just very poorly booked with Evil being there and with Evil becoming champion. And his first title run was also cut short with Okada just beating him again. And throughout these past 10 years, when both Naito and Okada became one of the main two of the main players in New Japan Pro Wrestling, it's always been Okada, and Okada is their answer to everything, of course, also winning the G1 for the second year in a row. And I think there is no question that Naito is just not viewed on the same level as Okada is. And maybe he'll get another title run, yes, but we've seen it over the past 10 years. Except for Okada and Tanahashi, there has never been a guy that has had a lengthy title run in New Japan. And it could eventually bite them in the ass to not have cashed the check that Naito presented to them. Because you've made this point years ago with the Tokyo Dome main event that Naito lost. That could have been the moment. That could have been the moment for Naito to advance to that level, but they chose Okada once again. And they, of course, thought about just milking it one more year. But I don't know if this was any favor to Naito in the end, because he clearly was incredibly popular amongst the fans here in Budokan. And they continue, of course, to rally behind him, but he will never be Okada.
Yeah, you know, and what you said is so true about, you know, years ago with the loss that he had at the Dome to Okada, and the crowd just went silent afterwards. I think that was like, you can't catch that lightning in a bottle twice that they missed on. That could have been his moment. And, you know, like, here's the thing. If you were to just list all of his accomplishments, it seems like this man has had this, you know, epic career.
Yeah.
And he has had a great run. Like, he's not at the level of Okada, yes. That's obvious. But he is a guy that's been a main player. You know, he's in the top five, you know, pretty much for the last 10 years. And, you know, if you look at his accomplishments, it's great. Three-time heavyweight champion. You know, a bunch of, you know, G1 wins, you know, things like that. New Japan Cup wins, Intercontinental titles. Look at those title reigns, though. One defense in all three title reigns.
Yep.
I don't care about COVID. Like, that's three times now that you've done that. And like you said, the other one was against Evil, and that was not critically acclaimed, to say the least, that whole feud. But, you know, they never got what they could have out of him, is the ultimate point. Yes, they've done stuff with him. He's been a guy. He's been in his role. He's done a great job in that role of getting the fans. But, and he's, like you said, he's still very popular. You could, it's not impossible to say that he's not the most popular guy in the company, even Okada to the fans, like to the fans themselves, not necessarily the most pushed. But, you know, in a lot of ways, they've kind of constructed this character to where him not being the ultimate winner is kind of a part of his story. But I don't think that's the right thing to do, though. Like, just because they did it doesn't mean it's the right thing at the end of the day. I think he needed that big run that solidified him as, you know, the true top guy that the fans could rally behind. And the thing is, we'll never know about that because they never did it at the end of the day. So we can only speculate. But to me, I think that look where it's led them to at the end of the day is where we're at now, which is not a great place overall, where New Japan is not in a great place right now at any level. So you have to think that maybe they could have done some things differently. And I think if you're going to point at anything, giving Naito a long run, I think that would probably be right near the top of my list of things that, you know, in terms of Gato as a booker, a showrunner, that's the one thing you can point to. I mean, there's a lot of things you can point to, but that, more than anything else, in terms of actual importance, because they've downgraded a lot of the other stuff so much, in terms of actual importance, Naito never getting that long, big run, that ace-level run, not forever, just for like a year or so, the year of Naito or whatever. Just never getting that is the biggest black mark you can put on the last run. I think that's the one that hurt them the most overall, but he has maintained his popularity no matter what, and he's where he's at. Like I said, I didn't take this. This loss to Ospreay was not about Naito. It was about Ospreay.
Yes.
In the New Japan lore. Like, you know, like maybe to the Naito fans, it'll be about Naito. But to the greater scheme of things, this loss was not about him. This tournament was about Okada and Ospreay at the end of the day. So, you know, that tells you all you need to know.
Yep. Exactly. That's it. I thought the match was really great. I got to say, whatever you want to say about Will Ospreay, I thought his selling of the neck was excellent in this match. And they, of course, went to the part much like Yoshihashi. Ospreay had his neck taped. They went back to this injury story from 2 years ago where he had to drop the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. And Naito was really vicious in this match, attacking Will Ospreay's neck with multiple great attacks on the neck, not only moves, but he also did these incredible elbows that he threw to Ospreay's neck, and Ospreay had to come back from that. He always was very limited in his actions throughout this entire match because of the neck injury, and Naito exploited this so incredibly well. I want to put this over. Great moment with this, with this top rope Frankensteiner once again. One of the moves that I always cringe with when it is executed in these Naito matches. Incredible near fall. Like the Osprey was able to reverse the Destino and then hit the Hidden Blade for a incredibly close 2 count. So here Osprey comes back from the Destino, once again Hidden Blade, and then the Stormbreaker for the finish. This, I thought, was a great, great match. And I mean, it has its weaknesses because of some of the psychological aspects to it, but I thought that Osprey like overcame a lot of that with just the way of selling his neck.
Yeah, I thought this was a really strong match. Top five of the tournament, in my opinion. I think Osprey's another guy I think has had done some of his best work in this tournament, in my opinion. I think that he's had a really good run throughout the tournament. That, again, here's the thing. He's somewhat similar to when Omega was in New Japan, in my opinion, in that it's like you can point to 80 to 90% of his wrestling that I think is awesome. And it's great. And it's so easy to see why everyone loves him so much, or a lot of people like him. Some people don't like him, especially in the West. But especially the Japanese fans, they really got into him big. But then there's like that 10, 15% that's like unbearable and makes me, it always takes me out of his matches.
That's true. You know, I want to cut you off right there. I'm sorry, Dylan, but I think he got rid of a lot of that.
Especially, like I said, in this tournament, he's done a much better job of that in general. I think he's had a really good run in the tournament. I think this here was a big match that he had. And I thought Naito, too. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that I thought early on, he was not having great matches. Or even if he was, he himself was not performing very well, in my opinion, in a lot of those matches. And the other guy was the one that made him. But by the last, I think that last match against Zach, that kind of gave him like a jump to his battery, so to speak, where he's like, okay, now is the time. And we saw here, it's like you see how great he can be in these matches when he's motivated, because I thought he was awesome in this match as well. Even that Destino title, we always complain about the Destino being a weak finisher, but I thought the way they did it was so cool. At the Stormbreaker to the Destino, one of his best ever, you could argue. And so both of these guys worked their asses off. I thought they had a great match. Big time main event. The crowd was into Naito, as you said. Osprey has plenty of fans in Japan as well. So they did a great job, I thought, in the match overall. And I really liked what we saw here. Like you said, the neck selling from Osprey was good. I thought Naito did a great job as well. You had a spectacular finisher. So, and I know that a lot of people wanted Naito to win, but just in terms of a pure, like, unbiased match, I am glad they did it this way of the two, because only because of what I said at the start. We've seen Naito and Okada 3 times this year. Mm. So I much prefer a match that, you know, I mean, we saw them at the Dome, Osprey and Okada, and obviously there's a lot of storytelling there. They have a rivalry of their own, Okada and Osprey, but the other match had been hammered to death, kind of, you know, another three. So I'm glad that we did this instead. And I think that, you know, obviously with the performance, it definitely justified it. And I thought this match, too, like I said, top five match of the tournament to me, Osprey and Naito.
Yeah, I completely agree with this assessment that this match was really up there. As I said, really enjoyed Osprey's work here. Naito, of course, eliminated from the tournament. So going to the finals. Dylan, I think that Katsushika Okada was closely watching the semifinal between Naito and Osprey, because right from the get-go in this match, he attacks Will Ospreay's neck. Usually when they start the match and one guy shoves the other to the ropes, they will just gently clap them on the chest and let them get away. But in this instance, Okada did not. And this really set the tone greatly for the next, I would say, 10 to 15 minutes to come, because Okada was completely ruthless when it came to Osprey's neck. He hit a lot of DDTs, both in the ring and on the outside. He attacked him multiple times with elbows to the back. I repeatedly exploited this injury that Osprey brought into the match, and so that's what I just said about Ospreay going into this match as the heavy underdog, and in a weird way, as the babyface, whereas in usual patterns in New Japan Pro Wrestling, he is not a babyface. In this tournament, he never was a babyface, but against Okada, he was positioned to be just that. And then the second part of the match then actually started with Will Ospreay reversing one of Okada's DDT attempts into a suplex of his own. Then he went to some spectacular offense. Of course, once again, channeling the Bullet Club, channeling AJ Styles. And later on, he also channeled Kenny Omega for whatever reason that was. He did the V-trigger and wanted to do the one-winged angel. He also did this great shooting, this great sky twister press off the top to the outside. Great stuff from Ospreay there. Yeah, but then, Dylan, he did this Bullet Club stuff. He wanted to hit the one-winged angel on Katsuchika Okada because everybody knows that's the move that Okada can't kick out of, or at least he only once had escaped from it because he made it to the ropes. And that's the point where I had this disconnect, because why is it that in New Japan Pro Wrestling, every bit of history they have is connected with the Bullet Club? And even with guys that don't have history in the Bullet Club, they just do Bullet Club stuff all the time. And this not only makes it look like these guys don't have their own attempts or their own moves, it also takes away from the Bullet Club guys, because they don't even stand out when others like Ospreay just go and do the Styles Clash and they do the Kenny Omega lore. I really don't get it. And in the DM that I just sent you before they did the show, I compared it to WWE always going back to the Attitude Era as their only portion of history that they have. And that's the thing that I just don't get. If you Will Ospreay, just be Will Ospreay and not go to the Bullet Club.
You know, I think there's a lot to say about this match. I want to back it up a little bit right now. You know, we'll get back to this Bullet Club point for a second. Okay. But I wanted to back it up a little bit. First of all, you know, I had the show on, you know, when we called here. Like I said, I really didn't pay any attention to the pre-final matches. But the first thing I saw was Jam Project, who did the song for G1, performing in this Budokan here. So shout out to Jam Project, a great band, has done many great anime theme songs in their time. And then at the start of this match, you had Shuri Kondo and Julia give the flowers to Okada and Ospreay, and they were both wearing masks. But it was very, very funny to see that. Like, the red belt champion of this stardom company come in to give the flowers to Okada, and Julia gave the flowers to Ospreay. So we started that there. So,
do you think Kevin Kelly on commentary said, would be nice if they returned the favor? Can you imagine Okada and Ospreay coming out at the final of the 5-star Grand Prix and giving flowers to the eventual finalists?
That will not happen. Go back to the show. We talked about the women's title for some of my thoughts on that. But so the match itself, the Bullet Club stuff, I will be very slight, because I mostly agree with your point. But for this particular person, I will give some devil's advocate arguments to propose to you here, at least, or to at least discuss. I'm not even arguing. I'm just throwing out these points just to see if we can agree or disagree on this or not. Because I don't even know if I agree. I more agree with you in my heart. But so with Ospreay, everybody knows that AJ is like his idol. You know?
Yeah.
So you see that. And Omega, I have no problem at all, because they're so clearly building to a match between them. So like, mm-hmm. that was super obvious. Like, it wasn't even just Bullet Club. It's just he's been embroidered into this feud with Omega for a while now and trying to build up this match, which, you know, very well could be a dome match if they are, you know, if Omega's ready to go for that, if they all want it to happen. Sure. Or it could be an AEW match. I mean, this Ospreay's going to be in AEW next week. By the way, speaking of Omega, just a slight point here. Yesterday, well, last night, Dynamite happened. Mama watched the show with me, and she's not an AEW fan. She usually watches Raw. But when they had this big deal about Omega coming back in, and she could not stop. Like, she was laughing her ass off at this. She could not stop pointing out Omega's gear, because he was in this long sleeve shirt, and she kept mentioning he has pads in there to make him look like he has more muscles, and was constantly laughing at him on that. He's like, you can see the padding under there and everything. So I don't know, you know, if that's true or not. And they're doing some kind of gimmick with Omega, but like, regardless, by the time the Dome runs around, Omega will be ready to have that match. If they don't do it on AEW, it depends on. I'm sure there's probably some negotiating going on between the two companies. Like, to want that, but they're clearly setting up that match, Omega and Ospreay. So for him to do that, I really have no problem with that at all, just because he's embroidered in a feud with him right now. The AJ stuff I took as him being his idol, but it is like, you know, for a fan, the Bullet Club stuff can come out. But what say you to those points I've raised?
Yes, I mean, I can see that. Obviously, it makes sense within the story between Ospreay and Omega you just brought up, and the AJ thing because he was a fan, yes. But ultimately, within New Japan, this is just Bullet Club history, you know? That's where I have the issue with.
Yeah, and a lot of guys do it. I think if it wasn't ever done as much as it is, I think that it would be a lot more tolerable. So I understand why that's where your mind went. Even like I said, right now, Bullet Club history is secondary to what's happening in the present. You know, in the timeline of this world. Not just wrestling, but just the time. You know, 2022 comes before 2020, or comes after 2020.
Yes, usually it does.
Yes, you know, just occurs, you know, according to the timeline that we're in. So, but, you know, I can understand why you went there. Like you said, in the New Japan history, you could say that. You know, the fans in Japan might not even care about any kind of online spats that Ospreay
and Omega. They clearly don't. I don't think they care about this, but they clearly knew what Will Ospreay was doing here, because I think he did it very smartly too, that he waited and let this breathe. So this was done really well when he just pointed the fingers at Ospreay, at Okada laying in the ropes, similar to what Okada looked like when they had the matches Okada and Omega had years ago, so the fans could really rally behind this moment in the match. So, done very well.
Yeah, I really had no problem with the Omega stuff. Just because, like, if he weren't feuding with him, I would agree with you. But like they've set it up so obviously that there's going to be a match between them. So, like, that part didn't really bother me at all. I have to admit.
Yes. So, the match, I just said it, it started out with Okada attacking Ospreay a lot, attacking his neck a lot to give him another handicap for the match, and they played this up throughout the match. There was Okada's back drop, this back body drop with a real high elevation for Ospreay. He landed on his back, but once again clutched his neck after that. And then when Ospreay was able to make his comeback and hit all his big moves, he then went for the Oscata. There was once this instance where he did the Oscata to the ring apron, and Okada had to slide in at 18 or 19, like he usually does. But then he went for the Oscata inside the ring, and Okada cut him off with the drop kick to the neck once again to then hit the Rainmaker, and Ospreay kicked out, which was a great, great kick out, great near fall in this instance. I have no idea. Has anyone ever kicked out of the Rainmaker?
Tanahashi did.
Yeah, Tanahashi did. Yeah, that's right.
I'm sure Omega might have. I don't know for sure. Like I said, you know, I hesitate to say on that. But I mean, if you count all of his various Rainmakers, lots of people have kicked out of him. overall.
Yeah, yeah, but then Okada was able once again to go to his finishing stretch with his Ensuigiri, and then the final Rainmaker, where I don't know. I really didn't enjoy this Rainmaker dance a lot in the end. I would have liked if they had booked it to be a more decisive finish, because both of them actually were pretty worn down, but Ospreay had to be more worn down like Okada. So them just going to the reversals once more was a great moment for Ospreay, because in the final 5 minutes he was able to once again find energy to respond to Okada's big moves. But ultimately, I thought it would have been better for the match context if he would have just gone down in all his fire and all his blaze of glory that he went into, because he was done for in the match story.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. I think that would have been better if they had just done. I'm never a big fan of this, you know, that kind of stuff. But here, they wanted to give Ospreay like one more kind of moment of hope.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, like I said, for him, it was a great moment to just be able to be put on this level. As you just said, we questioned whoever kicked out of the Rainmaker, and probably only Tanahashi. I only remember that Omega, he collapsed when Okada wanted to hit him with the Rainmaker. So it might only have been Tanahashi, but I'm not certain right now.
I feel like there's lots of matches. I will say, I don't know if they've kicked out, but I feel like there's been tons of matches where he's hit more than one Rainmaker in a lot of matches, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, might be. I might be.
Take this as this epic moment, in all honesty.
Okay. I thought it was a great kickout.
Yeah, it was, but it wasn't like it was historical. Like, it was a great moment in the match, in my opinion. That's how I took it.
All right, yes. Still, though, for Ospreay, great moment. Great opportunity, anyways, for Ospreay to be in this main event once again, because when he was World Heavyweight Champion, it, in my opinion, was really premature to put him in this main event spot at that point in time. But now it feels like after beating Naito and after going toe-to-toe with Okada in this match that he clearly was elevated in this tournament, to the point that he can believably be a challenger once again, once down the road against Okada. So he gained a lot from this match. Whereas Okada, okay, yes, Okada won once again. He didn't gain a lot. He's just there once again. But ultimately, Dylan, I really, really liked this final. I thought it was a great match. And what I liked most about it was that this, of course, in the final portion of the match, there were the usual Okada-isms, I want to put it this way. But I really was a fan of the first 15 minutes of the match, because we saw a much more vicious Katsushika Okada, who attacked Ospreay's back a lot, and his neck, of course. So it wasn't like the usual first 10 to 15 minutes of an Okada match where nothing happens.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm totally with you on that. I thought this was a really strong match. Again, one of the best of the tournament, really. You know, I thought they did a great job throughout it. Both men deserve a lot of praise for their work here. I think clearly Ospreay was very motivated, as he has been throughout the majority of the tournament. Okada, again, I said it about Ospreay, but I think Okada, to me, this is his, if you ask me, just off the top of my head, I mean, he's had better matches in the G1. Like, you know, in terms of, like, you know, tip top. But in terms of a full tournament, this to me was his best G1. I thought he was really strong in every match. Very consistent. He brought the best out of all of his opponents. He worked different styles, did a lot of different things. One criticism of this match. You mentioned the Okada-isms, but none worse so than the Money Clip continually being in his arsenal here.
And it didn't even make sense in this match.
No, you're completely right about that. So I think that continues to be kind of a down point, but one bad move can't ruin a good match overall, and I think that this was still a very good match at the end of the day. And as I said, one of the better ones of the entire tournament, in my opinion. I think it's right up there with the Naito and Ospreay match as well. I think Ospreay had a great showing in the semifinals and the finals especially. Okada's match with Tonga was very good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had this match too. So, like, both men to me have had some of the best work of their careers throughout this tournament. And I think they came together. Look, this final was way better than the last 2 years' finals. Like,
well, better than last year's for obvious reasons, but I absolutely agree with the other one too.
Yeah, Ibushi and Sanada. That wasn't anything special. Like, this felt like a really, or this felt like a G1 final by the end of it, in my opinion. They were able to work it there, and I think that's a good thing. So I got to give him props for that, at least.
Yes.
And yeah, I think one more thing. I think that's a big issue with a lot of this tournament is a lot of the time, you know, for the majority of the tournament until really these semifinal matches and maybe the block final. And even then, like you said, that was far from a great show overall or anything like super special. This hasn't had the feeling that you want out of your typical G1s. So for them to bring it back by the time of the finals, I think is a testament to the work quality that both of these men put on.
Yeah, I think so too. So I mentioned it earlier, this show almost doubled the attendance of the prior two Budokan shows, showing that there was a lot more interest in the Okada versus Ospreay match than in anything else they've put on Budokan before. And afterwards, Okada stood in the middle of the ring and he very weirdly said that he wants to make sure that the G1 Climax winner gets the main event on January 4 in the Tokyo Dome, which I don't know why he pointed out just that, because that's always been the case in the last couple of years. Except for when they did this convoluted tournament thing in the with the two dome shows. But now they are back to one dome show, and I'm really sure that he will be in the main event of the Tokyo Dome. I only think that he will wrestle Jonah once to get his win back from that. That will be his one defense of this title shot, and then he'll march on to the Tokyo Dome. The main event will stand in November, I would say. And he then also very weirdly called out Tetsuya Naito to be one of his challengers for the right to challenge the Tokyo Dome. So maybe that's the one in that Tetsuya Naito still has on the Tokyo Dome. What do you think?
It's clearly deliberate to play with the Naito fans, like to put him in these positions where they want you to give, you know, even though in reality he's not going to win in the end, he wants to make...
Give us more money so that you can still hope.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. They clearly see, for whatever their booking patterns is, someone sees him as a draw in New Japan, and rightfully so. Like, this has been proven many, many times at the end of the day. So they see him as that. Your version of that is very funny. Like him saying, like, yes, I want to be the main event of the Dome. Like, now, to be fair, I think, like you said, they had the tournament. They had Jay White stealing the briefcase, you know, doing some goofy stuff there. So they have kind of gotten away from that the last few years. And I kind of took this to be like, well, forget the briefcase. The winner should just automatically be in the Dome. That's how I took that. But like you said, you know, Naito there. So who knows what New Japan's going to do going into the Dome.
I just have to find this tweet because Chris Charlton clarified it a bit after the show. Let me see here.
Props to Charlton and Kevin Kelly as well.
Absolutely.
I know I was kind of hard on old Kelly the couple weeks ago for his weird tweet that he made, but I do have to give them credit for covering the tournament all through and making things more accessible to the English fans.
So the tweet says, I definitely agree with you. Shout out to the two. The tweet says, for those who cut after Okada headed backstage, he was asked to explain his comments on the contract and clarified that he felt to enhance the value of the G1, it should guarantee a Tokyo Dome main event spot. Anyone who can beat him before can perhaps call their shots sooner. So in Okada's mind, the Wrestle Kingdom 17 main event as of right now is X versus Okada. Okay.
That's what I said.
Yes, it does.
Okay. So yeah, that's exactly what I thought, and that is what he said. But yeah, your version is more funny though. Like, they're just like, hey, I want to be in the main event of the Tokyo Dome. That'd be like the Royal Rumble being like, I think that really everyone who wins the Royal Rumble should be in the main event of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, you know, like everybody knows this already. Why you saying that? But like, what he actually said, I think is a great thing. I completely agree. They should get rid of this stupid briefcase forever. Burn it, like set it on fire, throw it in the ocean, and tie some cement blocks to it, and let it sink to the bottom of the ocean to where my main man and Eastern Lariat listener Godzilla is waiting for it. I know he agrees with me on this. He told me so himself. So if Godzilla says so, then why are you not listening? You know, that's what I want to know about New Japan right now. But I get rid of the briefcase. That sucks. I've always hated it from the very start of the briefcase. I've always said on the show, I hate this briefcase. It sucks. I don't know why they do it. It's such a blatant ripoff of Money in the Bank. And the G1 finalists should get the main. I completely agree with what he said. The fun part of this, though, which still makes this fun to talk about, who was the one who started this briefcase gimmick when it started?
Well, Okada was.
Yeah, of course it was.
Yes.
So it's just like, remember when they did...
It's what we said years, like last year or 2 years ago, we made this statement that the real booker in New Japan Pro Wrestling really is Okada, because he always makes the decisions.
And even when it totally, like, retcons his own history as a character, much like when he was talking about the title, he said something like, if you listen, I was the one that always wanted the titles to be unified. Well, that's totally the opposite of what he said. He said he didn't want the unified titles because the Intercontinental title was worthless.
That's the only reason he created the King of Pro Wrestling, because he didn't want the title.
Yeah, so this guy, there's no consistency with his character. At least this one, like that one was literally like 6 months after he said that. He said this totally opposite thing. Now, this one, at least you go back years, there's probably a lot of fans that never even saw that or knew about that. You know, a lot of the newer fans. So he can get away with this a little bit better. But I love how he's retconning all of his own history here once again. Just treating the fans like goofballs with whatever. Maybe not him, Jermaine. You know, I'm sure they told him to say this stuff. But still, like, just treating your fans like with no memory of the past year. But whatever the case, whoever's idea it was, I'm glad they're getting rid of that. If that is the case, I think they should just toss that briefcase into the ocean, as I said, just get rid of it, because it sucks, it adds nothing, and I'm glad that they have caught on to that finally. And it should be Okada versus the champion, which in my opinion will very likely be Jay White. But like you said, with this Naito thing, who knows? Maybe with what he said, maybe he could have a match with Naito.
Yes.
Naito wins, and he calls his shot on Jay White before the Tokyo Dome, and that sets up Naito and Okada for one final time in the main event of the Dome, if they want it. You know, you think it would be Jay White, you think the champion would be there, but they flipped the title before, right before the Tokyo Dome at King of Pro Wrestling. So I could see a scenario where that plays out for him, because like you said, there's no real purpose to him calling out Naito. He's beat him a bunch of times at this point and had nothing to do with him in the G1. So that was a very random call on his part.
Yeah, I could see both matches actually headlining the Dome. The Jay White versus Okada match makes sense due to their booking patterns. And the Okada versus Naito match would be the more money-drawing match. So both actually make a lot of sense.
And Naito also makes sense in the booking patterns, because they love doing the same matches over and over.
Exactly, yes, yes.
Yes.
So there's arguments for both sides, actually. And January 4 will be the one Tokyo Dome show next year, Dylan. They announced that on this show today. So they are cutting back on one Tokyo Dome show, which is ultimately the best decision for the enjoyment of the Tokyo Dome shows, because both of us really haven't been high on these double dome shows in the last couple of years, because there was a lot of filler in between. But now there seems to be that there are a lot of big matches that are planned for this show. You mentioned the Ospreay versus Omega match being a potential match. Another one could be Zack Sabre versus Bryan Danielson that they couldn't do at Forbidden Door. That could be one. So there could be a lots of potential great, great matches, great big singles matches on this show, with maybe Kushida being another one that they consider as a draw if he wins the junior title. Maybe Kushida versus Hiromu once again. That would be for sure a big match. So this Tokyo Dome show shapes up to look very good on paper. But for them, of course, cutting back on one Tokyo Dome show is a clear indicator that there isn't a lot of interest right now in them as a company.
Yeah, that's the thing. Everybody was celebrating this, and as a fan, of course, I'm with it, the majority. The double dome shows, and not just the double dome shows, ever since they've done them on all of their shows, to me, I hate that crap. I think it sucks. Like, splitting shows in two. And that's a big reason why we're at where we're at now, in general, I think, in wrestling watching, is because even the big shows, most of these cards are meaningless. You know, at the end of the day, like, you know, the first half of...
And you could even look at these two shows, or even all three of the Budokan shows. Most of this just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it has no value whatsoever to anyone. And the match quality is not... And why would it be? And they're not going to try as hard in these meaningless matches as they would in a G1 final or a title match in the Dome. Like, clearly, the big matches are going to mean a lot more. So in terms of a show quality, this is a brilliant decision. I think the show is going to be way better than the last couple of Wrestle Kingdoms because I think that they've really struggled. But from a business sense, I mean, this is a bad sign. Like, you know, and we already knew Kidani was not happy with G1. He said it at the press conference. He wasn't happy with New Japan as a company. He said as much that the company's not doing well right now and that there was a lot of things he would change. I have a feeling whenever this was decided to go back, I'm sure he was really unhappy to hear this because this is one of the biggest shows of the year. The biggest show of the year, actually, undisputedly the biggest show of the year in Japanese wrestling. And now you're taking away a show because there's not enough interest. Because you can't sell tickets to these Dome shows anymore. That's why. Last year, in total, combining the shows, it was less than 20,000 fans. The first was 12,000 and change, and the second was 6,000 and change. So, like, that's not good, you know? like, that's not good at the end of the day. And if we're looking at another 13, 14, 15,000 Tokyo Dome, that's not even going to be great. Like I said, you know, the days of them having 40, 50,000 fans, that's just not going to happen, you know, at the end of the day. If they have filled the Tokyo Dome, that's a shockingly great number. And that shows how far they've fallen. That, you know, because like I said, in previous years, 25,000, that's a bad number. You know, like Omega and Tanahashi did nearly 40,000. Naito in the main event did a ton of fans, like even more than 40,000. So you're like, this shows you how far they've fallen at the end of the day. And even this show, this Budokan, is way down from where they were. Obviously, the pandemic has a lot to do with that. I think we all know that. You know, people are not wanting to go out to these big events right now in mass, I think, in general. But what
that really is a thing. Wait a second. Really is a thing that is not only wrestling related, but it is an issue for lots of just events all over the place, whether it's music, comedy, whatever you want to say. A lot of this event business really suffers right now. And one of the issues there is all these events that had been postponed in 2020 when the pandemic hit. Lots of companies and artists struggle with that. That is one of the points that, for example, the WXW office recently pointed towards in an interview, that they really have issues because of a lot of events happening in the summer right now that had been postponed, and there is a lot of concerts right now, for example, in Hamburg recently. Within like 1 week, there was I think there was Iron Maiden, then there was Judas Priest, I think. So all these big bands playing back to back. Ed Sheeran had 3 concerts in 3 days in Germany. So lots of events being postponed and happening at the same time as others struggle to attract fans to their events. So there's this really big picture thing right now.
How many fans were at the match with Tenshin in the Tokyo Dome?
I think they announced around 60,000.
Oh, so somehow this one show magically overcomes all of these odds. And yet, here's the thing. What they're really saying is that and this is what I've always said, and that show totally has proven me right years on end. If you have something people want to see, they'll come.
Yeah.
Like they proved it. It's case closed. That nobody wants to see this crap that New Japan has fed us for all of these years anymore. And that, you know, that's why they're down so much. If they put on a card that had as much interest as the Tenshin match in the Dome, guess what? They're selling out the Dome.
Yeah, you know, you're totally right on that.
But they don't have that, you know. So, like, there's no match that can possibly do that because the company is so far down at the end of the day. And that's the thing. Like, I'm not saying that it doesn't have any effect, but they prove to you that they will come out if you have something that people care about, genuinely. But they don't care about this company that way anymore. And there was a time where they could put 40-plus thousand fans in. You know, again, I go back. I said it on the last episode. Go back and listen to that interview with Jay from Dragon Gate. Mm-hmm. He said the same thing. Like, you know, 30,000 fans in the Dome to New Japan, you'll see people, you know, high-fiving and talking about how great the company is and how wrestling's back. But then something really important happens, and it shows you how far, even at its peak, wrestling still had to go. But now it's far from its peak. I think that things are way down. They wanted it to be three nights in the Tokyo Dome, not even two. Remember? 2 years ago, they had New Year's Dash in the Dome in 2020. Yeah. So they had three nights, they went back to two, and now they're back to one because people don't want to pay for their crap anymore. So that shows you how far they've fallen. And how bad of a job they've done throughout this pandemic. And I'm not saying it didn't have any effect. Obviously, it did. But could it have been handled a lot better to where we're not at this point? Yes. Like, yes. Like, big, big, big yes. All caps here. Mm-hmm. And it shows how bad of a job they've done. And like I said, you're not getting the owner or the president or whatever of the company coming out publicly and criticizing the profits and how bad the company's being run unless it's really bad. And look at last year. Not just this year. Ospreay, you mentioned him earlier, is the champion. He left. The company was in disarray by all points of view. They were running a million shows at Corkin, like begging fans to come, trying to put that number at the end of the year on that they could say, hey, we drew this many fans. It took us 500 shows to do them, but we drew this many fans.
We did it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're trying desperately to push that in. So, like, that shows you how bad of a job they've done the last couple of years to where we're at this point now.
And here on this portion of the show, we really come to the conclusion of the G1 climax, putting this tournament into context. And Dylan, I messaged you yesterday after I watched the semifinals. Of course, I sat down and you sat down. We all watched these G1 matches. But then I came across this tweet that Rob made. And of course, there's a lot of talk about the gift policy with New Japan and TV Asahi. But due to the lack of people talking about online, to some fans, to some wrestling fans, it really felt like that this tournament just didn't happen. Because there was the interest level in comparison to years before clearly was down. While I enjoyed this tournament, I still want to stress this, and I want to make this statement very clear. I really, really enjoyed this tournament. I thought this tournament has brought out a lot of very good matches, some great matches, and has done a lot for performers like Dave Finlay, for Will Ospreay. So really, really good stuff throughout this tournament. But if I wasn't already watching, I don't know if I would like start watch New Japan Pro Wrestling because of this tournament right now. And I don't think they made very many new fans. And I don't know where they will go from here, because clearly they have this one idea in mind, and this idea is Okada. But what happens, like, I don't want to say this could be something happening, but I just think about what happens if Okada gets injured. Who is there?
Oh, yeah, you know, it's a tough question to ask, because
I mean, they would have to go back to Tanahashi once again.
Yes, that's exactly who it would probably be, you know, in all likelihood.
They would probably put a Tanahashi and Naito match into the Tokyo Dome main event, and Tanahashi beats Naito.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds right. You made a lot of great points there, as you usually do. I do give you credit for that, but you made a lot of great points there. And it's definitely a symptom of a bigger problem, which was this entire company's booking in general, I would say. But yes, their main move, the one thing they've done right all of this time, is push Okada. And Okada has become a star, one of the biggest in, you know, you could argue, one of the biggest in the history of Japanese wrestling. Mm-hmm. Not top tier, but, you know, of the last 20 years, he's right up there. You know, it's him and Tanahashi have basically been the two biggest stars the last two decades. And they've done that. And they deserve credit for that, because it's hard. More accurately, it's not actually not hard, but a lot of companies make it hard to make stars because they don't do what they should do a lot of the times. But it's proven to not be super easy, for whatever reason, for these companies not to want to do it. But they've done it with Okada, and they deserve credit. Without Okada, I mean, you're in a really tough spot. Gato loves pushing Okada. He loves this Bullet Club story. But just like I said, look at the reaction to that Tonga J match compared to the Tonga Okada match. The fans are telling... Look at... I mentioned this on DM2E2. Look at where Evil is now compared to where he was 2 years ago. The fans have told you. Like, and not, I'm not talking about Western fans. I'm talking about Japanese fans. They've told you. They are not into this Bullet Club stuff over and over and over. And yet here we are. Like, you know, like a Bullet Club man is champion. Went nearly undefeated in the G1. Another guy was in the semifinals. Everyone else does Bullet Club moves in the company. So it's like the fans have told you that this is not that big of a deal to these guys as much as other stuff. Like an Okada, which is a legitimately big deal. Like a Naito, legitimately big deal. So we continue to go down these same tropes. This same road that Gato has made us walk all of these years. And we're walking it again with Okada versus Bullet Club member X. Jay White this time. And like you said, there really is no other backup. Tanahashi getting up there in age. You know, he's still a tremendous wrestler. Yeah. I thought he, you know, he had one of the best G1 runs, in my opinion. Like, he's still one of their best workers in the entire company. But that's not going to last forever. You know, you've basically got a 5-year window based on the career paths of like a Nagata, Kojima, who we see slowing down these days. Yeah. You know, you've got about a 5-year window or so, maybe even less. We know he's been through a lot of injuries. You know, he could, you know, it could be earlier, and I hope it's not. I hope he lasts. I hope he proves me wrong and lasts 10 more years at this level. But I would say 5 years is about the max for Tanahashi at this level. And then what? You know, because like you, they haven't built anybody up. I mean, we always say this. I always say this. No native new stars that they've built effectively at all. Like, there's nobody even close. It would be your Tanahashi and your Naito would be like who you could go to in a pinch. And they've shown a reluctance to go to both of those men lately. Mm-hmm. There's a lot you could look at in terms of, you know, special attraction type of deals they could do. But they've all proven to not be super reliable. So, for example, the three... Yeah, because I speculated. I thought maybe they're going to do a double show at the Dome. I was like, how are they going to stretch this out to two shows? And I got a few ideas bouncing around my head. Some people came at me with some ideas as well. But the main three that I settled on, so we talked about it already. Somebody like an Omega from an AEW, a guy who has a lot of history. Or, you know, like you said, a Bryan Danielson. I would personally would love that a lot if we could see Bryan Danielson at the Dome. But those guys... You're banking a lot on the COVID situation being fluid enough to where they can get in. I think New Japan would be able to make it happen no matter what, you know, if it comes down to it. It's just if they could negotiate this with AEW, who's proven to be a pretty, you know, look at that Forbidden Door. AEW came out of that show looking better than New Japan, just in terms of kayfabe record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stuff.
And that's an accomplishment. New Japan does not give up, you know, their talent that way to anybody, basically. But they did here. If they can negotiate the right thing, maybe that could work. Are you going to bank a whole company around that? No. Those are not native company contracted guys. You have somebody like a Shibata. He's a guy who has been through some injuries, a devastating injury, has only had a couple of matches back. He was not on the show, which is very surprising because he's been – like G1 has been his spot the last couple few years. Ever since his injury, he's been on the G1 at some point doing great things. And, you know, I think they miss him a lot. I don't know what's going on with his injury status, but he's a guy you can look at. Ibushi. I mean, this man has been a loose cannon on Twitter recently. I do think that he's a guy that – if they could sit down and work all of this out somehow, I think that would be something where, again, just in terms of interest, you know, like what I'm talking about is crowd interest. Like, you know, yeah. if Shibata came back and had a title match, for example, that was like my first idea. Like, forget it, just put Shibata in the title match. Like, who cares? Like Okada Shibata, that you don't need build up to that.
Much like you said on one of our last shows, they just didn't use him anymore after this one match.
And we don't know the reasons why. So no. I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. Ibushi, we know all the problems there.
Yes.
But if they could work something out, and he just, like, you know, if he just suddenly showed up, let's say at the end of the Dome, he shows up.
They brought him up on commentary today. Kevin Kelly brought him up when they talked about last year's G1 final, and he made the point that Ibushi still on the shelf, he said.
And that's true. He has had injuries of his own as well that we can look at. But if he came back, it would be a big deal. You know, at the end of the day, with all of the controversy that surrounded him, you know, if he showed up one night, the fans would be interested to see what he would do next, even though who knows how they would react to him after all that he's done. I will say that I think it's interesting. And, you know, he suddenly goes off on this late. Like, he was quiet for like 2 months. Him and Kidani were together at the match, like sitting together. And he hadn't said anything crazy or, like, provocative, I guess you'd say. Crazy is not fair, but provocative in the last few months. And then suddenly in the G1, now he suddenly goes off. And in that series of tweets, he mentions AEW by name, which I think was definitely deliberate, in my opinion, to do something. He's got some kind of plan. Whether New Japan's in on it or not, we don't know that. But I think he has a plan of some sort, and we could see something like that. If that were to happen, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just speculating on potential names that would gain interest in a main event scene, especially native, like Japanese names. Because I don't think that there is, you know, like I said, you could go to Tanahashi and Naito, but they're bleeding that well dry with these guys. Like, there's just nobody else. Like you said, like, legitimately, who would be the next guy? You know, it's crazy.
There is no guy that is anywhere near the level that they could believably be a main event contender for Okada.
Yep, you're right. Like, even if Tanahashi was in the main event, I don't think anybody thinks that he's going to beat him for the title.
Yeah, just take Tanahashi and Naito out of the equation, because they've been there. There is no new guy.
You know, it's just a continuing story. I've said it before, and it continues to prove true. I don't know why they don't take more care of that, but you know, I can see why. Like you said, you were talking about the G1. There's a phrase, I'm sure they have it in German, but it's out of sight, out of mind, pretty much. You know, you mentioned the GIFs on Twitter. You can't see those anymore. You know, not a lot of buzz for this tournament. It didn't exactly electrify the fans, you know, online, especially the English-speaking fans. Maybe these finals can get some talk going.
Quickly, want to say, Dylan, it's actually exactly the same saying, just in German.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good. Yes. So see, it's a universal phrase.
Yes.
Right now. Out of sight, out of mind. Yes. You know, if you can't
aus den Augen, aus dem Sinn.
How do you say that again?
Aus den Augen, aus dem Sinn.
Aus den Augen, aus dem Sinn.
Yes.
Yeah, so a shout out to the Germans listening right now. Nothing but respect, obviously. But, you know, the fans just, they're not that interested in this company right now. And I think it's tough because even if you were a super fan of New Japan at one point, we've seen all that they can do. You know, there's no next road to like, we're walking the same long road over and over. There's no next road. There's no fork in the road that you could turn onto a new chapter of this story. It's like you're seeing the same stuff over and over again.
Yeah, so that is really the thing where I question for how long will Kidani and for how long will the New Japan executive still look at this and let all of this continue like it does, with all the patterns and all the tropes they've done to death and all the matches they've done to death. For how long will this continue?
You know, I kind of said it again to bring up that women's title.
Yeah.
That was, I'm convinced that that's a call by the upper executives. Like, that was not like New Japan wanting that in.
I don't think that Ghetto one day woke up and said, yes, that's what we're going to do.
Exactly. Like that's the point I made on the other show. It's like, they didn't. If they wanted to do that, they would have done it 3 years ago when Bushiroad bought Stardom. Like, they would have done it already. They're doing it now because they're doing very poorly, and Stardom is very successful, and Kidani sees this, and he's not stupid, and he realizes that there's issues, and he sees a lot of the problems. And yes, you make a great point. We already know he's unhappy. Like, that's unquestionably true based on his public comments, unless he's just, you know, trying to stir up drama for no reason in his own locker room, which, I mean, who knows? Wrestling guys can be a little zany, a little out there, maybe have some crazy ideas. But in all likelihood, he's very unhappy with how things are going right now, and nobody can blame him. Like I said, going to one Dome show is all you need to know, is that things are not great right now. But hopefully they can work this out. And like you said, I think it's just time to get a new vision in there anyway. You know, even if you were hitting all home runs, you know, in Memphis, you know, the Memphis territory of wrestling, my hometown, where I reside, the old school, before I was born even when this happened, but the Memphis Territory, Jerry Jarrett, they would rotate the booker every 6 months. It would be one half of the year would be Jerry Jarrett and one half would be Jerry King Lawler. So they would always have fresh stuff in there. That was like their idea. They believed that you needed to avoid burnout. You needed to have fresh ideas every now and then to keep the fans on the edge, you know, on the edge of their seats.
And that's really not that original of an idea, right?
No, it's a good idea. It's a logical idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, Gato's been at this for a long time now. He's had his moments of glory. And right now we're at kind of a down point. And I think that it's not a kind of a down point. It's definitely a down point. Again, you can point to the COVID all you want, but at the end of the day, that becomes a crutch that's not fully accurate in terms of explaining all of the problems of the company. Again, like, just look back at the MMA stuff I just said. So if they can find some way to turn this around, and one day we will get, you know, like the end of the clap crowds, you know, the fans cheering and stuff.
One day.
Yeah, but like we've seen shows just right, you know, recently. They've not exactly blown up. It's not like, oh, you can have fans to cheer. Suddenly, all sold out shows. You know, it's not that simple at the end of the day. So they have to get a lot right, and I think that they do need a fresh ideas guy in there. But we'll see what they do. You know, there's no indication of that I can tell right now that there's something other than the public discontent from Kidani. So if he wants to make a move, maybe we will see something like that. Not this year, but I think it would be after Wrestle Kingdom if they
were. Yeah, I would think so too. Because if he felt like that, he could any day make the switch, you know?
And to be fair, again, it's much, much worse than it was before. But this final show, like you said, the other shows were disappointing. But the final show itself was the highest non-Dome show in wrestling.
Yeah, it was the highest attended Budokan show since the start of the pandemic.
Yeah, that's exactly what I just said. Like the highest non-Dome show. Budokan is not a dome.
Right. Yeah, that's yeah. But I'm also counting every other promotion.
Yes, absolutely. I mean that goes without saying, kind of. Like none of the other promotions are not going to beat New Japan at the moment. Unless Stardom
Noah for their first Budokan show back, they did like 4,000, I think, around that.
That was Muto and Go, right?
The back to Budokan show. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that was a good show. When was that? Was that 2021?
2021, I think, yep.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so yeah, that's definitely the pandemic. Then.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's a fine show. Yeah, the highest we've seen since. So we do have to give them credit for that. That gives him something to point to, at least. Like, hey, at the end of the day, my final show ended up paying off as good as it can, even though it's not nearly what it used to be. At least it's as good as it can be right now. And you could always use the COVID as an excuse, even if there are other problems. You can be like, hey, you know, what do you want me to do? This is a pandemic. You know, even still, even though there's evidence that that's not entirely the cause of their problems. But still, you know, it definitely played a factor. So it is what it is right now. I will say one thing, though. I agree with you. In terms of just purely as a fan, I liked this tournament. I thought it was really good, actually. Like, and I think it's kind of underrated by a lot of the other fans, just because
that I would agree with.
Yeah, but the interest wasn't there. Is the problem? You know, I think that's why people reacted like that. Like some G1s, I would say were overrated, but it's because they had so much passion and so much interest in the company that they loved it so much. And now this one, you don't have that same level of passion, and that's why people maybe aren't seeing a lot in it. Even though I think the wrestling quality was very good throughout the tournament. You know, I know a lot of people are going to disagree with this, but I think the format is like a positive. I thought it definitely helps a lot in the tournament. I just think that they booked things wrong to where things were so confusing until like the last day, you know, pretty much. And just in terms of people not wrestling, you know, every block should wrestle their own show. It shouldn't be mixed up and then some guys wrestle for one day, 3 days in a row, and then some times they wrestle. You know, don't do that. Like, none of that. That confused everybody, made things harder, and made people not interested. And it wasn't fun to follow in terms of, like, again, wrestling quality, good. Thumbs up. In terms of following the tournament and going along on a journey with these wrestlers, it's an F. Like, you know, like, there's no enjoyment to be had out of that. And I think that unfortunately took a lot of people out of it. But in terms of me as a fan, I liked it. I thought a lot of guys worked really hard throughout the tournament, and that's something I always like to see. I like to see big effort. I would say outside of B block, all three of the other blocks were a success,
yes,
ultimately.
I really hate to cut you off here, Dylan, but I really would like to bring this show to an end because I just got a message from my coworker and I would have to go back to work in a bit. But we still have some minutes left to shout out some of our favorite matches. I mean, we've done that throughout these past weeks and we've always mentioned those that one should go and watch. But ultimately, you mentioned that the semifinal and the final are really high in your list here. What are some other matches that you really liked from this tournament?
Yeah, I would say there's five or six that really stood out as, you know, must watch. I would say Naito. Yeah, like I said, the two Osprey matches this weekend would be in my top five.
Absolutely.
You got like Finley and Juice would be up there. I thought it was a really good match. That one, it's going to be tough, like, long-term, because it's going to be about the follow-up, I think, with some of these guys, how they doing. And that I'm not super confident on, to be honest. But for a one-night match, it was very good. I thought Shingo and Yoshihashi was a great pure match, like up and down, full match.
Without context, even this will just work.
Yeah, exactly. No matter what, you'll love it. Like, a great match, all things considered. Kenta and Zach, I thought it was a great match right at the start of the tournament, too. I still remember it at the end. Hard-hitting stuff. Great character work throughout the tournament from Kenta. And Zach had a really good tournament as well. But that was the peak of their matches, in my opinion. My actual favorite match was Goto and Tanahashi. I thought that was the best one.
It was a great match.
Yeah, way better than their June match. Way better than a lot of their recent matches because they're such a long-term rivalry. They've wrestled so many times, it's hard to really break new ground. But for whatever reason, I think the passion was there all throughout, and I thought they brought it. You had an amazing story. And Goto got the win, my favorite guy. So I maybe a little bit of Goto bias in effect there, but I really loved that match.
If you listened to this show over the past couple of weeks, you know some of the matches that I love the most, some of them that you already mentioned. I also want to mention the Osprey versus Finlay match. I thought this was really great. I thought, I said it here on the show, that my favorite Jay White match of the tournament was the one with Taichi. I thought that was a very, very good match. Slightly below that, I would point to Tomo Lawler versus Okada match. I really, really loved a lot early on. Then the Tanahashi and Naito match. We discussed that on one of our recent shows that I did like that a lot too. Early on, you mentioned some of the matches that we really loved. The Kenta versus Xavier match would probably be forgotten, but that really should be mentioned that this was early on one of the greatest matches of the tournament. And so overall, when I'm looking at these cage match ratings, there are really good ratings for most of these matches. And of course, for the obvious matches, we got really low ratings. But except for that, I don't have a direct comparison right now because I didn't compare numbers. But it certainly feels like that the match ratings are much in line of what you'd expect from a G1 climax in recent years.
Yeah, the match quality was very high. It was just missing the feeling of a G1. And the ability to follow the stories. I think that's where they need to improve next year. But the wrestling quality was very good.
I would really like if they could do something more than just the backstage comments on that. You know, if they have Kevin there, why don't they just add like this, I don't know, tournament headquarters where they'll just break down everything and they just do a 10-minute show on the off days where they just put everything into perspective. That would help out tremendously.
I think that's a great idea. You know, I think that would be a really cool thing for the fans. You know, like you said, just a very short video. It doesn't have to be an hour long or anything like that. Just 10, maybe 20 minutes on long days, going over everything, you know, recapping everything, catching you up to speed and helping you. And that would have been a huge boon for this tournament, I feel like, because then after every show, you could have Kevin Kelly or whoever say, hey, this is where we're at. This is what needs to happen. Explain things to the fans and make it easier for people to follow. I think would have been I think that's a wonderful idea. Hopefully somebody passes that along to somebody in New Japan.
Maybe someone's listening. So here, this is my free idea for you.
Yes, we will appreciate it because it's a great idea. We'll make your product better. So hopefully they do that. But yes, I completely agree with that. I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, all right. So This then concludes our discussions about the G1 Climax 32, Dylan. I want to say that I enjoyed this a lot throughout the last couple of weeks, discussing not only New Japan Pro Wrestling today, it was only New Japan Pro Wrestling, but we brought in different companies throughout these past weeks, and it really was a blast for me to go through all this, and I hope that the listeners enjoyed this a lot too. And I want to thank you for always being there.
I'm always here, Striga. And I always will be. And I will continue to do some shows coming up. We have a lot on Patreon right now. I did a show about Stardom, the Big Corkin show. And I highly recommend everyone watch the main event of the 1,500 seat sellout.
15,000 in Corkin Hall. They packed
all. That's an Anoki numbers that I'm using for this. You know, we mentioned Anoki maybe coming back earlier. He's actually in charge now. But no, the 1,500 seat Corkin Hall show, Mirai versus Suzu Suzuki. Absolutely phenomenal match. One of the absolute best of the entire year. It's something everyone. The whole show was great. The last five matches were all recommended or highly recommended. So everybody watch that. That's a great show. Noah in one doing some stuff on that too. I've reviewed every single show so far, every single match. All Japan, I'm about to do a show on as well. And Yannick coming back, Swadoosh. He'll be back on to talk about Peter Pan this weekend. We will be doing a show about that. So, like Patreon is the jam. Like, you're getting everything on that service there, only for $5. And if you only care about Noah, it's even, you can get it on all three tiers, like one or three. Like, you know, Stardom, you can get the $3 because it's Joshi. So, you know, like, any price, like whatever you're doing is all good. Like, but please sign up and listen to our wonderful shows, at least in my opinion. I at least it's wonderful for me because I love talking to everybody about these Japanese wrestling shows. And obviously for the free listeners, I appreciate you all so much. You know, it really means the world to me that we have all these people that listen all across the globe. You know, really makes me so happy and more excited to follow these tournaments. Like you said about the G1, you were like, if you weren't already watching, you might not watch. I'd watch everything because I'm just so fired up about Japanese wrestling because the fans, you know, that means so much. And thank you for everybody, too, for devoting the time to listen to all of these shows that we did. We had so much fun. I know you did, too, String, and I definitely did. We had so much fun going on here all the time, and hopefully you guys enjoyed it, too, for a tournament we actually liked, even though, like I said, we were talking about business stuff, and it was kind of a down segment, but we actually liked the tournament overall, and the finals delivered.
Yeah, but
hopefully.
I really just want to say that putting this into perspective, sometimes you have to put out things like they are right now, and that's not looking very well, but that's where we are at some point.
And, you know, there's a lot coming up in wrestling. There's a lot to be excited about in wrestling, not just G1. Now that's back there. Like I said, we still got three tournaments going on now with Royal Road in one and Five Star Grand Prix. Five Star Grand Prix is going to be going on for the whole month of September, too. So get in on that. I'm telling you, you're going to want to listen. You got to sign up to Patreon. You want to listen to my rant I did on the Mirai and Suzu match because it was so awesome, and have many words for haters of a certain wrestler that are they're going extinct now. They're below the mud, Striga. They've gone below the mud, these Mirai haters. And like I said, now we're seeing though that people are talking good about her now. People's opinions are suddenly starting to change, and you know there's going to be a lot of people saying, "No, I was the one that always liked her. I was the one." There's proof of it from the beginning that I was there, always supporting Mirai there. But very fun stuff there overall. But yes, thank you to the fans. Thank you to the listeners.
Yes.
I love all of you guys, and hopefully you continue to join us. Now that G1's over, we will be back eventually. It probably won't be as much as we've been doing in the G1.
No.
But still, we will be back, and we will talk about all of the great wrestling in Japan, our favorite country when it comes to pro wrestling.
Yes, absolutely. And what would wrestling be without the fans? The answer is nothing. And what would the Eastern Lariat be without all the wonderful listeners? The answer, of course, also is nothing. So I want to thank you very much for listening to this show about the G1 Final 2022. And goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.